Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Today was the first morning I had to scrape my windshield in coming here, so winter's here. And we will have a wonderful mix of, maybe it's a wintry mix, of serious and delightful stories for you today. Of course, we'll start with the news roundup. Then we'll go to some amusing holiday stories, as it's that time of year. And you may have seen the new magazine from the Ames Community School District in your mailbox recently. So we'll talk to Eric Smith, the Director of Communications with the school district, about that magazine. But first, it's Friday, and so it's time for the news roundup brought to us all the way from California by Dennis Hart.
Lots of stories were reported this week on the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers, so let's get started. In Tuesday's Trib, word that the State Board of Regents has approved Iowa State's plan to renovate restrooms inside Parks Library on campus. The project involves gutting and reconfiguring 14 existing restrooms stacked throughout all five levels of the library in order to meet Americans with Disabilities Act compliance and to meet the needs created by increased university enrollment. University officials said the bathrooms are in poor condition and do not meet ADA requirements. The project involves renovating the existing restrooms and providing two larger ADA-compliant restrooms, one family restroom and one custodial closet on each floor. Construction will take place in two phases, one next summer and the other in the summer of 2019. Total cost is $2.3 million, funded by general university appropriations. Four other projects were taken to the Property and Facilities Committee of the Board of Regents and will be considered for full board approval in February. They include plans to build out the nearly 19,000-square-foot fifth floor of the Biosciences Facilities Advanced Teaching and Research Building. That floor is now a shell space designated for future expansion. That project could cost between $6 and $6.5 million. Also being proposed in the renovation project for The Hub, a campus dining location, it would cost about $2.5 million. Another proposed project involves expanding and rebuilding Hilton Coliseum parking lots to the north and south, providing 282 stalls and rebuilding access drives to the east and west. It would cost about $4 million. And yet another project involves improvements to be made to the Maple Willow Larch recreation fields at a cost of nearly $3 million. Also in Tuesday's Ames Tribune, the sports page Bar and Grill in West Ames has permanently closed its doors. Co-owner Jim Bird said the business was underperforming compared to its sister restaurants around the state. Sports page opened late last June and was the sixth store co-owned by Bird and his business partner Joe Kane. The building is on the former site of Wallaby's Bar and Grill. About 25 part-time and full-time employees worked at Sports Page. Also in Tuesday's Trib, outgoing Ames Mayor Ann Campbell and outgoing City Council member Peter Arazem looked back on their city government careers. Mayor Campbell is retiring after serving 12 years as mayor and 16 years as a council member. She told the Tribune she never planned to get into politics, but did so after she was appointed to chair a transit advisory committee by former Mayor Paul Goodland. That committee eventually formed what is now CyRide. She said the city was at its most challenging and at its very best in the aftermath of the 2010 floods. In her words, it was taking a crisis situation and bringing together varying parts of the community in order to get through. She said one of the disappointments during her tenure was the RecPlex, a proposed community recreation center near Ames Middle School that never came to fruition. But she said she sees many of the ideas for the RecPlex being brought back as part of the Healthy Life Center proposal. Councilmember Arazem was first elected to an at-large seat in 2010 and to the 3rd Ward seat in 2013. He said overall he is satisfied with the work he's done in office, pointing out enrollment growth in the Ames School District and the high-density housing projects in Campus Town. He said the biggest change he's seen during his time on the council is in the attitude toward Ames. In his words, we would literally have people who tell us, why should we bother to make Ames better because we'll never be Iowa City? I think now you have sort of a sense of, we can get things accomplished, and we deserve to be a growing city. Arazem said that Ames should keep pushing to diversify the city's job base instead of relying on Iowa State. Mayor Campbell said that issues of diversity still linger in the city and asked residents to continue to push for an accepting community. Also in Tuesday's Trib, a story designed to entice football fans, especially Iowa State football fans. It's about ISU graduate Dennis Locke, who is now in his fourth season as Director of Analytics for the NFL's Miami Dolphins. He's responsible for bringing what the Trib called a data-driven perspective to player performance, player personnel, and coaching analysis. He even gets to suggest an occasional play for the Dolphins. It's a long story, and you can read all about it in Tuesday's Tribune. One more note from Tuesday's Trib. The American Heart Association is looking for applicants for its annual Go Red Heart Health Makeover Challenge in Ames. 12 women will be selected to take part in the challenge, and applications are due at the end of the month. Those chosen will experience a 12-week heart health makeover in which each woman will receive a personalized exercise and nutrition program. In Wednesday's Ames Tribune, word that the City Council approved the first reading of its potential new rental occupancy ordinance Tuesday night. At the same time, the council also signed off on an amendment to the measure's parking ordinance, and at the end of the evening, it was clear that the council still has several big discussions ahead. Under the potential ordinance, which still requires two more readings to be enacted, up to three adults could live in one, two, or three-bedroom rental properties. For four- and five-bedroom homes, one person could occupy the house per bedroom. An overall cap would be set at five adults per property. The ordinance would also regulate parking. One, two, or three-bedroom houses would need at least two off-street parking spaces, while properties with more than three bedrooms would need one parking space per bedroom. Earlier, the council had voted that the off-street parking spots would have to be in existence as of January 1st. But the council changed that on Tuesday night. Councilmember Bronwyn Beatty Hansen proposed freezing the number of parking spots between January 1st and April 30th, when a moratorium for the issuance of rental permits for some parts of the city expires. That way, landlords would be able to add parking spots so more tenants could occupy their homes. For Beatty Hansen, the change serves two purposes: allowing landlords to add spaces and potentially use all their bedrooms, while also giving the council time to evaluate what types of parking additions it will allow. The council unanimously approved that plan. The council spent some time talking about a motion over when and whether landlords would be able to add bedrooms to their properties, but no consensus could be reached, and that motion was withdrawn. All of this talk and confusion over the past months has come about because the state legislature passed a law that nullifies the city's current rental regulation, which mandates that no more than one family or three unrelated people live in a rental property. That current regulation goes away January 1st. Normally, new ordinances need three readings to be adopted, and the City Council has only one regularly scheduled meeting before then, next week's meeting. So Mayor Campbell outlined three possible options: either suspend the rules next week and pass the second and third readings at that one meeting, or schedule a special meeting for that third reading, or wait until the first meeting in January to pass the ordinance. So it's still not clear when or if any new ordinance will be passed. Also in Wednesday's Trib, Story County supervisors told county staff and a consultant to go back to the drawing board and come up with a new plan that would reduce cost estimates for possible improvements to the county animal shelter. This after Animal Control Director Sue McCaskey and Jeff Harris, a principal architect, told the supervisor that costs could run as nearly as high as $700,000. The supervisors all agreed that's too much. Supervisor Loris Olson said in her words, "We can't afford this." McCaskey agreed with Olson, saying she nearly fell over when she saw the final estimate, that she had no idea, for one thing, that the shelter's heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system needed to be fixed. Supervisors Board Chairman Rick Sanders said he thought there's only one good option: to set a dollar amount and see what improvements can be made within that limit. Supervisor Martin Chitty said he'd be willing to consider a cost slightly over $300,000. McCaskey said about $150,000 of the project's cost could come from the shelter's Friends of the Animal Fund. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, Ames police were investigating a drive-by shooting that took place just south of Campus Town late Monday night. That shooting left one woman hospitalized. Police were called to the 500 block of Stanton and found an Ames woman suffering from a gunshot wound to the leg. Police said witnesses reported a dark-colored sedan was driving northbound on Stanton when shots were fired, and the woman was struck while she was standing in a driveway. She was taken to Mary Greeley Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, then transported to another hospital. Ames Police Commander Jeff Huff said witnesses reported hearing multiple gunshots. Huff said police did not know what motivated the shooting. Anyone with information was urged to call the Ames Police Department or the anonymous tip line. That line's number is 515-239-5533. Again, the tip line number, 515-239-5533. Another story in Wednesday's Tribune, three more Iowa State Greek organizations received sanctions for multiple violations over the past week. Those violations included hazing, contempt, and alcohol use. After being placed on interim suspension at the end of October, the Sigma Chi fraternity was penalized for hazing, misuse of alcoholic beverages, contempt, and violations of conditions of recognition. Those conditions are the policies that qualify the fraternity as a group at ISU. Contempt can refer to failure to comply with sanctions, or with university officials or police, or with providing false testimony in a university process. The Pi Beta Phi sorority was sanctioned for misuses of alcoholic beverages and controlled substances, theft, or damage to property or services, and a violation of conditions of recognition. And the Phi Delta Gamma fraternity was sanctioned for misuse of alcoholic beverages and controlled substances, contempt, and violations of conditions of recognition. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, a new Iowa State University survey revealed that farmland values in Story County increased 3.3% since last year. The estimated average price of farmland per acre in the county rose from nearly $8,400 to about $8,600. In Boone County, farmland prices rose from about $8,200 an acre to more than $8,400. Statewide, prices increased 2%, going from $7,100 an acre to $7,300. The main driver of higher land values is a tight supply of property for sale, which drives up competition to buy available farmland and drives up prices. Also in Wednesday's Trib, the Ames Chamber of Commerce and its affiliates honored various members of the community Tuesday for their service and business contributions. You can read all about those honored in Wednesday's paper, and also read about the 21 students from schools around the area who got together in Ames on Tuesday to celebrate their semester-long work experiences with local companies. In Thursday's Ames Tribune, word that nearly 2 months after an Ames High locker room was vandalized with profanities and racial slurs, the investigation into the incident has concluded with no leads. In October, members of the Little Cyclones football team and their coaches returned home after a road game to find that a whiteboard and multiple lockers in the school's locker room had been vandalized. Ames police were immediately involved in the investigation. A school district spokesman said the district believes it's reasonable to suspect the vandalism was committed by a few Ames students as opposed to staff or a rival sports team. However, no information about who committed the vandalism or why has turned up. Also in Thursday's Trib, the Ames City Council has approved a voluntary annexation, adding about 70 acres to the northern part of the city. The property at 4605 Hyde Road is just north of the Bloomington Heights subdivision and west of Hayden Park. The developer plans to turn the land into the Auburn Trail housing subdivision. Also Thursday, the Tribune reported that an Arkansas company is finalizing plans to build a Marriott Hotel in South Ames and that former Iowa State quarterback Seneca Wallace is a partial owner. The company intends to build a Marriott Courtyard Hotel on two lots totaling about 165,000 square feet on South 17th Street. The hotel will have 120 rooms and create between 50 and 60 part and full-time jobs. The Tribune also reported about what many Ames residents heard on Wednesday morning. That loud bang that rang out was the result of a transformer malfunction at the Ames power plant, a malfunction caused by the high winds that were blowing through the city. Those winds caused the transformer and power plant Unit 7 to go offline. No one was injured, and apparently no electric service was interrupted. And there was a story about Friendship Baptist Church on Mortensen Road in Ames, which will give away hams after its regular church service this Sunday. Pastor Moses Ward told the Tribune that it's the church's way of helping less fortunate families. In this week's Nevada Journal, Nevada school board members had a short night at their meeting on Monday. The board first approved a quote for upgrades to the softball field. Those upgrades include putting in a fresh infield of sand and Brian Red Rock, rebuilding the mound circle and plate, and installing drain tile. The cost will be about $53,000. The field should be completed and playable for the 2018 season. The school board also approved a $33,000 quote for softball field bleachers. The board also approved the submission of an application of $251,000 for programs targeted at dropout and at-risk students. Also in the journal, the Nevada man who allegedly stabbed his former girlfriend at an apartment on T Avenue this summer pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. 40-year-old Douglas Oliver Kelly Jr. pleaded guilty to willful injury with a sentencing enhancement for use of a dangerous weapon. Kelly originally was charged with attempt to commit murder and false imprisonment. Court records indicate that Kelly went to the apartment of a 28-year-old woman several months ago and went inside to talk to her about an ended relationship. Police said when the woman's back was turned, Kelly allegedly pulled out a knife and began stabbing her. Then he took the woman's keys and cell phone to prevent her from leaving or calling for help. She eventually was rushed to a hospital for treatment. Kelly was arrested later that same day. His charge requires a 10-year prison sentence with a 5-year mandatory minimum. He is scheduled to be sentenced next month. In this week's Boone News Republican, the Boone Community School District Board heard from middle school principal Scott Kelly on Monday about possibly using the Jostens Company for school pictures instead of LifeTouch. Jostens already does the yearbook for the school. Kelly said Jostens would ask students to sit in 6 different poses for the pictures, and parents could then choose the pose they liked and order online. The photos would be shipped to homes instead of going through the school. The board took no action on that matter. The News Republican also reported on a recent meeting between the Boone County Board of Supervisors and residents of QF Lane in Madrid. Residents of the lane have said the board is not in as good a condition as it should be, considering the amount of traffic it carries. Also in the News Republican, the Fairway store in Boone is partnering with the U.S. Marine Corps for its Toys for Tots campaign. The goal is to provide toys to less fortunate children this Christmas. Fairway will be accepting donations at the collection box at the front entrance until December 23rd. This week's Story City Herald reported that the annual senior variety show that took place at Ames a few months ago raised more than $13,000 to benefit the Story County Vietnam Veterans Chapter 1102 and Heartland Senior Services of Story County. The Herald also reported that more than 150 people turned out in Roland recently to enjoy a soup supper, a visit from Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus, and singing around the community Christmas tree. Everyone had a good time. And there it is, your weekly summary of news through the pages of the Ames Tribune and nearby area newspapers.
That was the Local News Roundup with Dennis Hart, and you can hear that each Friday morning on Local Talk on KHOI. On Wednesday's Local Talk show, we had a segment on the upcoming CAFO's Water Quality Forum. They talked about the need to revise the master matrix, which is connected to the construction of CAFOs in Iowa, and how the present system of approving those kinds of operations is not working effectively to protect residents and their lands. You can listen to that Local Talk show. If you missed it, just go to our webpage and you'll find it there. And if you want to attend this important gathering where these issues will be discussed further, here are the details. The CAFO's Water Quality Forum will be Monday, December 18th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Ames City Auditorium, 515 Clark Avenue. For more information, you can contact Pat Schlarbaum at PT Schlarbaum. And I think we'll put that link on our webpage because it's a little hard to spell. But you can contact him, PatSchlarbaum, at gmail.com or 515-460-1815. The winter holidays are getting close. Coming up are the winter solstice, Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, and some others. So we thought we would start to get you into the holiday spirit with some cat Christmas stories. Who doesn't love cat stories? In Ames, there's a leash law for cats as well as dogs, and at this time of year, a Christmas tree with its lights and dangling ornaments can add an extra level of excitement for an indoor cat. Kay Puttock spoke with Ron Edwards, the animal control supervisor for the City of Ames, about the cat leash law and ways to respond to it, especially at Christmas time.
The leash law has been around for quite a while. As far as I can see, it was at least 1988, the last time that that particular ordinance was updated. So it's been around for quite a while. There's more and more communities that I think are looking at legislation and trying to keep cats contained. We typically see a lot more cats in the animal shelter than we see dogs, actually 41% more cats mm-hmm. than dogs. And that's just our shelter. Across the United States, it's kind of the same situation where there's far more cats in shelters than there are dogs.
And the reason for that is?
Well, I think there's not quite as much focus on getting them spayed and neutered. I mean, there's lots of great groups that are really trying to encourage spaying and neutering. But unfortunately, there's still a lot of people that are not spaying or neutering them. They're allowing them to roam outside. And unfortunately, they're finding friends and making babies. So making it difficult. It's an overpopulation issue. And we're very fortunate here in Ames that we have a very responsible community. There's a lot of communities here in the state and, again, throughout the United States that are not as fortunate and have as responsible communities as we do. So there is an overpopulation issue. Unfortunately, people tend to let their cats out, and they don't realize that there's some pretty significant dangers with the cats being outside. And we see a lot of those cases every year come into the shelter.
Yeah. Cats are also very effective predators against birds and songbirds. Is that part of the reason for this?
You know, I wasn't part of the original discussion when this became part of the law here in Ames, but I can tell you that across the United States there is a lot of discussion about cats that are killing songbirds and just kind of wildlife in general, whether it's mm-hmm. baby, other types of baby wild animals that they may be attacking when looking for food.
Well, so, not necessarily looking for food. They seem to do it for sport, actually.
Yeah, some do, definitely. It's for sport, it's play, but some are trying to survive out there, you know, mm-hmm. especially as cold as it gets here in our winters, they're looking to try to survive. And again, they're so much safer indoors.
Okay, so it's basically a safety issue. Now, is it really possible to train a cat? It's called the leash law, to train a cat to walk on a leash.
You can, and we've seen several people that have successfully done that. I would probably not be the strongest supporter of that. I think there's other ways. If you totally believe that you have to have your cat outdoors, there's catios that you can build, which is an outdoor patio that for a cat. But it's completely enclosed, so predators cannot get in and attack them. We talked about the cat being a predator, but there's also predators that are looking to harm the cats. So a catio is just an enclosure.
It's like an enclosed porch.
It's an enclosed porch that's nice and secure where they can go out and still enjoy some of the things, you know, listen to the songbirds and watch the songbirds, but not attack them. But you can also use, they have some of the baby carriages that have the completely enclosed where it has a zipper enclosure.
So they can, like, look out.
You can look out, but they can't, nothing can get in there to them, and they can't escape from you on those walks.
Now, some cats, like I think it's Abyssinian cats, certain breeds of cats, they just need a load of exercise. They leap around. In fact, I knew someone that had some of these cats, and he had a special, like, enclosed porch for them, and there were all sorts of levels that they could jump up on.
Yeah.
They got quite a workout
sure.
out there.
Yeah. Enrichment's very important for cats when they're indoors, and there's lots of things that you can do to, you know, help encourage that playtime and provide them with the things and the tools to be able to exercise and get that energy out of them.
Now, if a cat's always, from the time it's born, being kept inside, it probably doesn't know what it's missing. But if a cat's been used to being outside, I'd imagine it's very hard to keep it inside.
Well, I always tell this story to potential adopters that are coming in that want a cat that's going to live outdoors. When I moved here from California, my mother moved with me, and she had her four cats that had always been indoor, outdoor. One of them at that time was 18. She's now 22, still alive. Had been indoor, outdoor all of her life. She got her when she was a kitten. She thought it was going to be extremely difficult. She didn't know how she was going to do it, but I had to set down the rules and the law and say, look, this is how it's going to be in this house here. And she was perfectly fine.
Really?
She's perfectly fine staying in the house. We have window ledges where she can sit on and look outside
right,
and watch
like
the snow, and didn't get any of that in California, but she can watch the snow here and the squirrels. And so it really wasn't that difficult. I think sometimes people, you know, the cat's meowing at the door that they feel like they've got to let it out. And again, it's just not safe. And we've got to be the human and control that. And we're the bigger person for that.
Right. So you've talked about predation, that the animals might prey on the cat. There's also danger from traffic, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah, although cats do seem to be a lot more canny than actually dogs are.
You know, every year we do pick them up in the streets that unfortunately have either attacked by other animals or hit by cars or disease, injury, things like that, or may have just died of natural causes. Mm-hmm. But we do pick them up in the roads here in Ames. And, you know, that's, of course, always sad to see. It's always sad when we pick up animals like that, but especially when they're domestics and, you know, they've had a life and you know, hopefully had a family and now they're gone.
And the owners might never know what happened to it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, as soon as I said dogs seem to have much less sense about cars than cats do, I realized, of course, you know, dogs can be trained to lead blind people and they can be trained to be very careful with cars, of course.
Absolutely. And there's far fewer. And I think a lot of that, of course, dogs are very smart, but, you know, cats are too. But I think a lot of that has to do with the owner's responsibility. And they're a little bit more responsible about the dogs going outside and running loose and kind of keeping a closer eye on them, whereas the cats, that you tend to open the door. And we get a lot of calls all the time. I haven't seen my cat for a few days. Whereas if a dog owner comes home from work and the dog's not in the yard or in the house, there's almost sheer panic and they're calling us looking to see if the dog is there. So a little bit different for cat owners. They tend to give it a few more days if they allow their cats to go indoors and outdoors.
Cats tend to wander around and find new owners too if other people start feeding them.
Yep, absolutely.
When I lived in Massachusetts, it was a quarrel between two neighbors because one was feeding the other's cat and the daughter was of the other house was – and there was a standoff in the street about this.
All over a kitty.
Yeah. You know, it's one of them was holding the cat. And it's a question of property, lady. I remember that line. But But cats, they do tend to do that. They'll sort of turn up.
Well, you know, it is so important. You know, can we talk about the dangers and everything? And cats that are declawed are even at more danger for being...
Yes. Because they can't even climb a tree.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, some of them are, you know, it's amazing to see some of them sometimes that they can still do some of the things. But if they don't have their claws, they've lost that ability truly get away and just in general.
What do you think of declawing cats in general?
Well, I'll tell you, it's something that we're adamantly against at the Ames Animal Shelter. There's quite a few countries that have outlawed it.
Right.
Declawing.com is a great website with a veterinarian who written that and talks about the potential dangers of declawing and what it can do in causing arthritis in the legs up into the back.
Because it doesn't just take the claws out.
No, it's an amputation. The American Veterinary Medical Association said it is an actual amputation. I think there's not enough discussion and education as to what the procedure actually entails. You know, so when you're taking your cat in for a spay or neuter, you know, let's throw in a declaw. I don't think that people totally understand, and I know they don't because we have those discussions almost on a daily basis, at least weekly basis, mm-hmm. at the shelter, when people think it's just maybe just taken off that nail, and it's not quite as simple as that.
Okay, now it's nearly Christmas, and I understand that when you have a Christmas tree in the house, the cats love to climb it.
Yes,
which shows, you know, they're meant to climb trees. So, any advice about that?
Well, you know, I in my house, I of course always get the shatterproof decorations on my tree because I guarantee you that not long after I put them up in the tree, they're going to be down on the ground. The cats like to go up and knock those. They go out and play with them. You know, climb up in the middle and knock them down. And you know, to me, it's fun. I like to see that. I know they're enjoying that time and playing, and it's that exercise that they're getting. So I have no problem with it.
So there's not a danger of the tree tipping over or anything?
No, I make sure it's very secure, and of course using all secure the LED lights, so it's never hot by any means.
Thanks to Local Talk reporter and producer Kay Puttick for that segment. Kay's discussion with Ron Edwards reminded Ursula, our station manager, of a Christmas cat story we had played previously, so she dug into our archives to find it. This is the Christmas Tree Surprise, told by Paul Nelson.
Oh, Christmas memories. Paul Nelson here, and I came up here to Ames in 1971 from Arkansas. Spent my childhood in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and one Christmas I remember because of something that happened involving a couple of animals. I was about 10 years old, and Christmas morning came, and I was very excited because, among other things, I had a brand new bicycle under the Christmas tree. So I came down the hall, entered the living room, and my parents were there. We gathered around and started opening presents and so forth. And I looked over and noticed that our Siamese cat had all of a sudden grown a huge tail and was looking very intently at the Christmas tree. And looked over at the Christmas tree, and I could see a little bit of movement back there. The cat kind of slunk around to the side, tail growing bigger, if that's possible. The Siamese cat is relatively short-haired, but this tail was as big around as a raccoon's tail at this point. And I saw a little bit of movement back there, and all of a sudden, a huge black snake emerged from the back of the Christmas tree and started gliding across the floor toward the hall. Its head was held high, about 6 inches off the floor, looked like a cobra, and that cat followed that snake out into the hall, and we heard a scuffle. We did manage to corral the snake and put it outside, but the cat walked around the house the rest of that day with a huge tail, looking in every corner, trying to figure out what in the world had just happened. We never could figure out where that snake got in the house. But black snakes are non-venomous, and they're not uncommon in that part of Arkansas. Oh, the bike was very nice, by the way. It was a nice new Schwinn. So how's that for a Christmas? Yep. Surprising. Surprising. A Christmas surprise. I'm Paul Nelson, and I grew up a Catholic. But I'm fond of saying that I gave the church up for Lent one year and never went back. For the entire Central Iowa, for the KHOI listening audience, have a very, very happy solstice season.
Thanks to Paul Nelson for sharing that memory with us. We'll be bringing you segments and stories related to other winter holidays during the coming weeks. There's been a lot going on with the Ames Community School District in recent months. Three new school board members were elected in September, and Superintendent Tim Taylor announced his retirement, which will take effect at the end of the school year. And there's been attention to the racial and ethnic disparities in the schools, as well as student protests at football games. In the midst of this, the district has a new director of school, community, and media relations, Eric Smith. He came in earlier this week for an interview. You took over a few months back when Kathy Hansen retired. So how long have you been on the job?
I have been in the district since July. July 10 was my first day on the job. And so it actually feels like I've been in the district longer than just July, but the 6 months have completely flown by. So and it has been absolutely great.
But you've been making some changes in terms of communication between the school district and families and the wider community. So to start, let's talk about one of those. In particular, Ames residents received something new in their mail this past weekend, a magazine from the Ames Community School District. Tell us about that magazine. What's the idea behind it?
I came in with experience of putting together publications, and, you know, it's kind of funny. I remind Dr. Taylor of this. During my interview committee, I said, you know, if you're going to hire me, and there are clearly other good applicants, you know, in this process. And I told him, I said, you know, if you're going to hire me, it's going to be because of the stuff I can do with video and really my graphics and design and photography sense. I had this magazine in mind back then, but I was going to probably table it for about a year before I really brought it up. And probably in October, Dr. Ross and I were having sort of an informal conversation about, you know, publications and communication, and it just sort of came up organically, and I took that as an opportunity to just run with it. And I said, if we want to do it, I'm ready to go, and I'm super excited about it. It's the very first edition. It got into my mailbox this last Saturday, and I would imagine many
Mine
other mailboxes.
Well.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. And it might trickle throughout the week. You know, maybe Monday, Tuesday, it got to some others. I don't know exactly, but everyone in Ames should have them by now. So.
And it went out to everyone who lives in Ames?
So
every house?
For the most part. So we mailed to everyone in the 50010 and 14 zip mm-hmm. codes, with the exception of North Ames, which is not our
which
school
is in Gilbert,
district. Yes,
yeah.
The Gilbert School District. So we didn't mail there.
Mm-hmm.
But we mailed out a little over 11,000 of them across yeah. across Ames.
Yeah,
so
it was a nice surprise. And what would you say is the purpose of it as opposed to other forms of communication or media?
You know, that's a really great question, and I had to start thinking about that. I think in many ways, you know, we have a responsibility to communicate, and they have a right to know what is happening in our school. And to be quite honest with you, there are a ton of good things that are happening in our schools that people, they don't have an opportunity to get into our schools. They don't have an opportunity to really see what is happening. And I think that on one sense, we have a responsibility to communicate those things, and that can happen. You know, prior to this magazine, you know, we work with the Ames Tribune, and they do some great stories that are happening in our classrooms. We have our social media, which we've expanded some over the last 6 months since I came on, and we've introduced a lot more video to really show people what's happening. But that doesn't hit everybody in town. I know, you know, I use my neighbor. Her name's Janine. I use her a lot as an example. But she's a very active woman. But she's not on Facebook. Mm-hmm. She's not on Twitter. I don't think that she owns a computer. And so she doesn't really access what's happening in the school in that way. And this is one way that we can communicate a lot of different stories to the people of Ames of what's happening in our schools.
Mm-hmm. And especially to people who may not have students in schools but are taxpayers and have the right to be informed and to know what's going on.
That's exactly right. I think, you know, I think about how many people there are in Ames, and, you know, our enrollment is 4,300 students, and, you know, some of those are siblings. So really, like, our households, 2,500 households in Ames, you know, have – I'm guessing, you know, I'm just maybe 3,000, but really we mailed out 11,000 of these. Yeah. So really, you know, our audience for this are people who don't have kids in our schools, and it's a way for them to see what's happening. I mean, you know, the cover is Iowa Teacher of the Year. I would venture to guess that there are a lot of people in Ames that didn't realize that the Iowa Teacher of the Year is in Ames.
You had an interesting story about something that happened to Eileen Sullivan, the Teacher of the Year, just recently.
Yeah. I just saw her this morning. She had a funny story. So, you know, I got mine on Saturday, and I'm guessing she did as well. And so she went out to eat, and the waitress stopped, and she's a former Ames High grad. She stopped and said, pointed at Eileen and said, "You were in my mailbox today," which is, you know, a really just, I don't know, funny side story.
So it's catching people's attention.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I'm actually most proud of. You know, there's great stories. One of the things that I wanted to do, and I think, you know, other publications probably lack this, is to me, I wanted it to be visually appealing. I wanted people not to just take a look at the cover and then set it aside and never look at it. I wanted to kind of draw them in. And even as you page through, my focus is really on the visual, the colors, the pictures, just to really tell that part of the story, because I think that can tell a lot.
And it's about 20 pages long and lots of photos, but also informative text. So there was the article about Eileen Sullivan, the Iowa Teacher of the Year, a chemistry teacher at Ames High.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about a few of the other stories. There was a story on the future of Ames High, the building, the decision over whether to build a new one. What were you hoping people would learn from that story?
I'll back up and then ask me that question again if I don't answer it. So the publications that I've done before, I was in charge of, you know, putting it together and the design. And then I was also in charge of the printing, and the circulation was much less on the publications that I did before. So I could finish it one day and start printing the next day. And then I would have, once the printing is done, I would have, you know, 3 months, because that was also a quarterly publication, and I would have several months. Well, being we're doing 11,000 of these, the process, that, you know, the printing process takes longer, and now I'm finding, wow, I really have to have this next edition done by, like, you know, the middle of February, because we're kind of hoping to have a target of having the next one in mailboxes by mid-March. Mm-hmm. And so my mind is already working on what the next one is. And the things that I really start thinking about are, there are big district-wide messages that we want to communicate to people. And there are some in here, and you brought up one of those. What's going to happen with Ames High? I think the people who want to know about where we're at in that process, the information is out there and they can know that. But there, you know, like I said, there's a lot of people in Ames that they may not even know that we're having a bond vote in April. Mm-hmm. And the next one, you know, we talked about it some in this one to kind of, this is where we're at on that process right now. But then the one in March will have, you know, more information just so that people can be educated. And if they choose to go out and vote, then they can do that and they can vote accordingly. You know, some of the other of those big district wide, you know, there's a couple of those stories in here. There's some specifically on, you know, some smaller stories on Ames High. There's, you know, two pages that recap, you know, some of the activities in Ames High. There's a couple elementary stories involved. Mm-hmm. I really want the stories to be diverse, you know, to really cover a broad spectrum between the district messaging and then the classroom stories.
And you also had information on the pool, update on the pool,
yeah.
Because that's something else that people may need to be considering in the future.
Yes, yes. And you know, a lot of these are talking points that we hear a lot of, you know, where are we at on this? Where are we at on this? And this is not the only way, but this is one way where we can get a lot of information to a lot of people in one shot.
And then there was also an interesting story on the abilities assessment pilot, which
yeah.
is a different kind of story because it was more curriculum related
yep.
and teaching, actual teaching and learning
yeah.
related. What were you trying to communicate to people there?
One, it appealed to me because it was a curriculum story and we didn't have a lot of those. But I think there's a lot of interest in what our curriculum is. You know, what are we doing in the classroom and how are we reaching students? And so for me, it tied into how we're reaching all of our students, how we can use, you know, that abilities assessment. So they're doing the assessment. They did it some last week and they're finalizing it this week. And then we'll get the data back to kind of see. So we're choosing between two. And this was, you know, the pilot to choose between the two. And so then we'll get the data back and we'll make a decision moving forward. But once we get forward, we'll be able to use this abilities assessment as another tool to gauge where students are at. So we can use this, you know, to be a part of some of our advanced classes. We can, rather than just standardized tests that, you know, they take once a year, we can use this abilities test that doesn't assess content knowledge, but really like the reasoning mm-hmm. skills. Then we can use this assessment as well, which is just, you know, another tool that we can use to place kids appropriately.
And one issue that has been getting a lot of attention in the community is the presence of racial disparities.
Yeah.
And so there was a two-page, you devoted mm-hmm. two full pages
yeah.
to that to let people know what the district is doing.
Yeah. It's a topic and it, you know, it's been a big topic really since I came on in July, and it should be a big topic. It's a topic nationally, but specifically, you know, there is a disparity gap, you know, and we've talked about that mostly at school board meetings, but in some of our online publications, our blogs, and really this was a way we want to continue the conversation. I think, you know, that as a school district, we've been honest in that we don't have all of the answers, but this is what we're doing now to address this. And, you know, that is likely going to change and evolve over time. But the conversation is very important. And two pages was easily justified for that.
There was a photo on the back
yes.
that was interesting of students at the football
yep.
game. Could you explain what that photo is? And because people may not know and why you chose to include that?
So it's at a football game. It's our student body. And if you've ever been to a football game, our student body, really any event, but, you know, football in this sense, our student body is amazing. And I feel like, you know, since I've been on, we've had a couple incidents where we've been in the news for the wrong reasons. And it's not that our students did anything wrong. It's that, you know, things get out of control. And so this picture in particular on the back is from a high school game. It's from the night when the students, the three high school students protested at the national anthem. We've talked about this a lot at length, you know, at the time, and I'll continue to say it, the way that our students handled that situation in that they came together and came up with a resolution and worked together, and they got our administration involved, everything they did it the way that we would want them to do it. So we don't necessarily talk about that in the magazine. I'm mm-hmm. impressed that you picked up on that.
I know some of the students in the picture.
Okay.
That's why.
Very good.
It's a striking photograph.
It's a very
moving photograph. So
yeah.
I thought people might want to know a little yeah. bit of the story behind it.
Yeah. I haven't really talked to many people about that. I particularly like the photograph. Actually, I did not take that photo. A student did.
Huh.
It came from James Webb, who heads up the yearbook at the high school. He sent it my way.
Great.
Not in regards to this magazine, but I had access to it, and it's the color pops. from a visual standpoint and aesthetic standpoint, I really liked it and wanted to use it.
Also, that's interesting that there's student work in here as well. A student photograph.
Yeah. And, you know, really, this first one, I'm really happy with the way that it turned out. But we kind of, in many ways, we rushed it because we wanted to hit this. I wanted to get it out in December. Then we can turn around and have the next one come out in March. And so in many ways, we rushed this one a little bit, but I don't think it's lacking in any way. But I think moving forward, there is, you know, I'm not tied to anything in this magazine. There's going to be opportunities to have more student work in future publications. And we'll have some of, you know, the same ideas of stories as far as we'll have some district messaging in each edition of the magazine. We'll have classroom stories in each edition of the magazine. What those are will change over time, which I think is the beauty of it, because in my mindset, there's always the next one. There will always be the next magazine, and it'll come out in 3 months. And we have another opportunity to highlight what our students are and teachers really are doing.
So your goal is to have 4 per year?
Yep, 4 a year.
Okay,
that is the idea.
Look forward to that.
I'm putting together a survey right now that will go out this week, really just to get feedback. You know, what do you think? What else do you want to see in the next edition?
Specifically on
the
magazine.
Yeah, specifically on the magazine, because I have already a running list of what really, once we get back from winter break, I'm going to be really hitting it hard on the next edition as far as really getting some stories put together. A lot of it will probably, if you know, the audience, if they engage with our social media, they'll probably see a lot of the stories that will be in the next magazine early. I mean, not everything in this magazine was exclusive to this magazine. In fact, very little of it probably was. A lot of it is already on our website. It's on our social media. But this is sort of one spot where it can all be together. I mean, there's, you know, you said there's 20 pages, and there is, but there's probably like 28 separate articles throughout the whole thing.
You've been making some changes in terms of how you use social media and so on. You've got the new magazine, which is a big change. Is this part of a district communication plan, and how do those pieces kind of fit together?
It's part of my plan, and it's my job, I guess, to have that plan. I asked Dr. Taylor during my interview process, I said, you know, what's your leadership style? And he said that he hires people to let them do their job. And, you know, he's specifically talking about me being that was, or, you know, whoever is going to be in this position at the time. And he goes, it's a lot easier for me to pull back the reins and slow someone down than to kickstart them. And I said, you know, you will not have a problem kickstarting me. And I think that really appealed to him. And so it's part of my plan to utilize social media, to utilize this magazine. Those are probably the two biggest focuses of mine as far as our communication plan. You know, the social media stuff is very immediate. It's very right now, but then it also gets buried. You know, if you or I, if I'm on Facebook but I don't go on Facebook or check Twitter for a couple days, I'm missing stuff. And that's okay. This magazine can help combat that a little bit and help keep people informed. So those are the two biggest things. And with social media, I'm trying to do more video stuff, which is not something that's often seen. You probably don't follow a ton of school social media accounts, but, you know, with the exception of ours, maybe.
Yes.
You know, I follow others, and I do this as well, so I'm not, you know, being critical of everyone, but every school social media page looks the same. It's a group of kids with a picture, and they have a couple sentences of a project they did. And I do the same thing. You know, that's kind of what, you know, school social media has evolved to. But they all kind of blend together, and it's tough to really engage the community. And, you know, in my case, the community within Ames, to really engage with stuff. You know, there has to be some stuff that's different that really captures people. Because, you know, I know, you know, my habits, and on Facebook, you know, you're on your phone and you're flipping through it, and you could just start going past stuff, and you need a reason to stop. And in many ways, video is, well, it's here now, but, you know, it really took off over the last couple years. And that is one way that people can, that will get people to stop and engage with what's happening. Otherwise, they see a group of pictures with kids. Unless it's your kid or you know one of the kids in that picture, you're not going to stop and really engage with it. And so I'm trying to find ways to be more engaging on social media, and video is one of those ways.
Are there ways that you can find out from people how they would like the district to communicate with them?
That is also on my – I actually – in the survey that I'm putting out on the magazine, I had a couple questions about communication as a whole, and I'm debating on whether to include it so I can focus just on this, and then I think in future iterations I'm going to engage that. I think over, you know, the last 6 months I've really been focused on developing my process, you know, working with the schools, working with teachers and administrators, and kind of filtering that through our social media, through our website. And so I'm working out those kinks right now, but I'm getting to the point where I'm feeling pretty comfortable with that process, and now I can take on new things. You know, the magazine is one new thing, but that is something that I need to be aware of. And
how will the survey be distributed?
So I'm putting it together now. I'll post it out through social media. I'll probably email at least immediately some of our teachers and stuff, just to get their feedback as well.
So it'll be electronic?
It'll be electronic, yes.
So again, people who aren't internet users would not be captured in that?
For this particularly, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, right now.
We've been talking about ways that the district uses to get information out to people. Are there going to be new ways that the district gets input from people other than the survey on the magazine specifically? Like, do you see that communication as two-way and something that needs to be beefed up perhaps?
I think it should be two-way. That's a really good question. I don't know that I have an answer for that outside of the channels that, you know, already exist. I know, you know, there are citizens that are on our SIAC committee, so we get some input that way. But those don't meet, you know, every week or even every month, so it's pretty fragmented. We do get some input, you know, all the directors and administrators obviously have, you know, their channels of getting feedback and information, but I don't know that it's as systematic as maybe what it should be.
The upcoming legislative session is almost upon us, and my question is, what's the district's vision, or does the district feel they have a responsibility for keeping people informed of things going on at that level? For example, the upcoming legislative session, things that may happen around education, or even at the federal level?
I think that our prime, you know, I always think in concentric circles, and I think, you know, like our students and our teachers, our students and our parents are, you know, within that first realm, and then, you know, the community outside of that. And the things that I always think about is, if it impacts our students, you know, what are we doing about it? And I think it's our responsibility to probably filter what's happening at the federal and state level and really make it accessible so that people understand, how is this impacting our students? And I don't have an example on this, but I've encountered it, you know, this year where, you know, the state was looking at doing something, but, you know, it wasn't set in stone. And so we're kind of in a wait and see mode. And yet, the school year is moving on, and we have students to teach. We have, you know, students who are learning in our classrooms. And so the local level is kind of in that in-between phase of, you know, in some ways, you know, we're impacted by what happens at the state and federal level, but we don't have room to stop and think about always, you know, what those decisions are until they are made and they are done. And even at that point, there are times when, how does that impact us? You know, we don't, it's not always clear how it impacts us. So I think if it impacts our students, then we have a responsibility to communicate that to the citizens of Ames. But if we're not sure, then I would rather, as far as this publication, I would rather engage people with what is impacting our students.
If people, for some reason, didn't get a copy, is there a way they can get a copy of the magazine?
We overprinted about 400 of them, so I have some in our district office. You know, I got some to our schools yesterday, so they'll be at the offices. We have some, obviously, at our district office. I'm going to kind of make way. I brought a couple in here. I'll leave
them
in the lobby here.
KHOI.
Yep. I'm going to head over to the Historical Society because they contributed to one of the stories. I don't know that they knew it at the time that they were contributing to it.
Because they had that exhibit on the history of Ames High.
Yeah. And I actually haven't seen it yet, so I'm going to go over there next and take a look at it.
Yeah, we've had them on the show talking about that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gail.
That was Eric Smith, the Director of School Community and Media Relations for the Ames Community School District. Just to clarify one thing that Eric and I discussed, the cognitive abilities test that the district is piloting is related to the racial and ethnic disparities that exist in who is enrolled in advanced programs and courses like the Extended Learning Program, or ELP. Tests like these are now being used by a number of districts. The goal is to reduce the racial bias in the measures and processes that are resulting in a low proportion of students of color being identified for those kinds of advanced learning opportunities. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to Dennis Hart and Kay Puttick for their segments, and to Eric Schmidt from the Ames School District and Ron Brown from Animal Control. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, This Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI's membership drive has recently wrapped up, but we are still looking for your support. So it's a very good time to become a member of KHOI. You can go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button, or you can call 515-292-2878 and donate that way, or come by the station and join in person. We always love to see our listeners face-to-face. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means that you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you'd like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI Radio is provided in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying the wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.